joined by Veronica Nye, an economist with the American Farm Bureau Federation. And Veronica, a few points we want to touch on today, but first, I think going into this winter business season, farmers are starting to meet with their bankers, and we're talking farm bankruptcies, taxes, you name it. And so when it comes to farm economics right now, where are we at and what information is out there?
Sure. Well, you know, I don't have to tell your listeners that, you know, the farm economy remains pretty soft. You know, when we look at, we're seeing upticks in farm bankruptcies. We're up 24% this year compared to where we were last year. You start looking at what commodity prices might look like going forward, and, you know, frankly, there's not a lot of room for optimism that we're going to see $8 corn anytime soon. But the question that gets asked a lot is, are we back in the 80s? And, you know, so far, you know, I look at that 24% increase in bankruptcies, and I said, that's dramatic, and that's terrible if you're one of those farms. But if I compare it to the same time during the 80s farm crisis, we're looking at 4,800 farms closing per year. And last year we lost 480 through the bankruptcies. So, you know, a tenth of where we were then, you're still looking at pretty supportive interest rates and an administration that seems to be very supportive and knowledgeable of the fact that that the farm economy is so soft, and that on the trade front, we've had some concerns and have felt it in our pocketbooks.
And I know you started to touch on it when mentioning interest rates, but really what differs and what has changed since the 1980s until now that farmers are maybe a little better off?
Well, you know, I think when you look at your balance sheet, certainly the significant appreciation that we've seen in farm assets is really the underlying driver there. You look at the total value of land and buildings and equipment is significantly higher than where we were back in the 80s. So as long as, you know, as interest rates stay low and stay reasonable, servicing those loans that we've got out there for operating loans and for those longer term asset purchases are still much more manageable from a cash flow basis than they were in the 80s when we were looking at 15 to 20% interest. So, you know, that we've got a stronger balance sheet from the asset side, and as long as we can, you know, keep those costs down as low as we can with interest rates, with declining or at least steady regulation, and we can keep costs under control, then, you know, we've got a shot of making it through this. And this year, this downturn being much shorter than the 13-year downturn that we had in the 70s and 80s.
So, Veronica, you touched on it a little bit earlier, but the trade piece is a huge piece to the overall farm economy right now.
Absolutely. You know, you look at the overall picture, and 20% or so of farm income is associated with exports. And, of course, that goes up for certain commodities. We're looking at 60, 80, 90% of production being exported. So when we're looking at having trade disputes with four or five of our top customers, we're feeling it. And you know, farmers and ranchers and those who are selling our products are doing their best to find additional markets. But China's a big market to try to make up.
Any other markets right now that have either a positive or negative impact that we should be focused on as well beyond China?
Sure. Well, you know, I'm glad you mentioned that because, you know, we're all pretty familiar with the $14 billion loss that we took in the Chinese market between, you know, 2017 and 18. But when you look at overall exports, they were only down $5 billion. That means a lot of our customers in other places were buying a wider variety of products. They were buying in a larger volume. So certainly when you look at those fast-growing economies in Southeast Asia, that's going to continue to be a good story for U.S. agriculture as we're growing long-term demand for our products. And then, you know, we do talk about the questionable portion of the trade portfolio, but certainly we would be remiss if we didn't talk about what's going on with Japan. And that's a big positive deal for U.S. agriculture if we can actually have the tariffs decline in January as we're expecting. That makes us more competitive in that market again and allows us to not fall behind our competitors in that market.
And a final piece of, I guess, newsworthy content to talk about would be recently the Farm Bureau had a piece of information out regarding consumers and spending, correct?
Sure. So, you know, as we're getting ready to go into the eating season, Thanksgiving, Christmas, the winter holidays, and consumers, I think, spend more time at the grocery store than they normally would, and they're hyper aware of how much they're spending at the grocery store, and I think it's important for us to continue to remind folks that the U.S. spends the least among any developed country in the world on food spent at home. So less than 5% of our disposable income is spent on food. And imagine all of the things that if we were more like a Mexico where they're spending almost 10% of their income, or Nigeria where they're spending 60%. Imagine how different our lives would be if we were spending that amount of our income on food. So, you know, it really, I know when you're loading up that grocery cart and you're saying, oh my goodness, this seems high, and this is a big expenditure. Imagine if farmers and ranchers weren't as good as their job as they are. That's something that we're certainly proud of, that allows a U.S. consumer to really stretch their income and have the lifestyle that we've all grown accustomed to.
Well, again, Veronica Nye, American Farm Bureau Federation economist, Megan Turnquist reporting for the Red River Farm Network.